It's a freedom machine like no other. Starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break. But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. And break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with Tom Clancy. Tom is a third-generation entrepreneur, and he is the founder of Valiant Technology. And we're going to talk about, does your business scale like a taxi cab or like Uber? And I wanted to have Tom on the show because in his business, he's made that shift from working on the single project basis to becoming a managed services provider. And that's kind of like, you know, taxi cab versus Uber. You know, think about it. When you get in a taxi cab, you get in and the meter turns on and it starts to run. And I don't know if you've ever been in a taxi where you're stuck in traffic or there's an accident and you just keep seeing those numbers go chick, 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 you know, clicking up, clicking up, clicking up, and you start to get kind of nervous and kind of antsy, and you have those frustrated, tight-lipped discussions with the cab driver along the lines of, you know, why don't you take 6th Avenue up or you know, cross on 54th Street because there shouldn't be as much traffic, or what's the matter? What's going on here? Do you hear any traffic reports? And so you're getting anxious, and the driver's getting anxious, and there's a lot outside of your control. And every minute spent, as you see those numbers keep clicking up and up and up, you're not so happy. And you're also not developing a sense of an ongoing relationship. I mean, when small businesses don't add in into their budget a line item for technology, they're not seeing it as an integral part to the systems that make their business run. So again, it's, you know, rather than it being overall on a managed services basis, they're looking at it as a one-off. And it's really hard to scale when each project, like each trip in a taxi cab, is very specific and very customized. You know, that's something we touch on in our special report, 10 Steps to a Million Dollar Business, because if every project you have is a one-off and is customized, you're quickly going to reach an upper limit. So to get out of that and to shift some of that business model, go to businessexponential.com/podreport to get your copy. And another thing is, Tom, you'll hear, he also drills down into how he shaped his team into squads that have a specific focus. Not only does that help prevent chaos, as you'll hear, but it helps him better measure his revenue and his profits to know whether the proactive or the reactive services are taking too much time, or you're structuring those offerings in a way that really is profitable and makes sense for your business. And that's really what I'm looking forward to drilling down into with Tom on our show this week. So a little bit about Tom Clancy, and no, he is not the best-selling author. Tom is a third-generation entrepreneur and a troubleshooter. He got some of that from his maternal grandfather, George McCann, running a local handyman business in South Queens during World War II while the younger men were away at war. And in the next generation, his father worked as a Mercury outboard racing crew chief, plumber, carpenter, general contractor, to Tom himself, who started by fixing his bandmates' electronics during their time on the road and in studios and around the country, and using his downtime, in quotes, to service the New York advertising industry's technology, both uptown and down. Tom founded Valiant Technology in 2002 with two partners, and 13 years later, they've got nearly 30 employees, over 100 active customers, and they don't plan on slowing down their growth and the development of their unique toolkit at any time soon. So we're delighted to have him here on Business Breakthrough. Hey, Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
What I wanted to talk to you about is you made a really important transition, which was from that hourly rate, kind of like a taxi cab, to retainer-based services. So tell us first, why did you make the shift?
Well, we made the shift for a couple of reasons. One, it's definitely the way that the wind began to blow or was threatening to blow in our industry. We were fortunate to be early in detecting that. And the other was that really philosophically, we realized that it aligned with what we how we wanted to position ourselves to our customers. When you are a taxi driver and you are paid by the mile, you endeavor to find tourists that don't know that you don't need to go up the West Side Highway to go down the FDR to get over to JFK. You know, you hope that that's who you get. And what I'd really rather have is I'd rather have customers that trust me to do my job and don't look at their watch except to just pay attention to when their next appointment is. When my profit margin and your profit margin both are protected because we do our job well and we prevent you from having problems, then we're aligned. Our goal is aligned. Our business is aligned. And then there's no chance that you'll say, oh, don't worry about installing that antivirus package. I've got things to do and I don't want to pay you by the hour for that. Instead, they say, oh, you think we should have that? Great. Well, put it on there. Fantastic. You know, because now there's a lot less second guessing. When I walked the floor, when I was an hourly provider, people would look and just always have that look on their face like, oh my God, how much is this visit going to cost me? Now, when they see me walking the floor, they say, oh good, I'm getting value for my visit. Hey, how's it going, Tom? Great to see you.
Nice. And so there's a closer connection with the client as well. So what was the process of figuring out how to keep that profit margin that you referred to in terms of making the transition to retainer-based services?
Well, I mean, it certainly involved us looking at what our profit was on our relationships as they stood. The first thing that we did was we took a look at our existing customers and took a look at their billing on an annualized basis and then just, you know, divided by 12 to say, well, how much are they paying us on average on a monthly basis anyway? And our initial opening offer to our customers was just that. We said, look, this is what you've been paying us for the years that we've been working together. We have over a 90% customer retention rate. So most of our customers, they stick around for a long time. So we had the opportunity to say, look, in the last 4 years of working together, you've had a fairly constant rate of consumption. The problem is that there are some extra things that I want to do for you, but I don't want to necessarily charge you because my suspicion is by doing those extra things, I'm going to be able to reduce some of those headaches for you. 95% of my customers were like, fantastic, great, where do I sign? This is awesome. And then I had the last 5% of my customers that said, well, if you do those extra things and there is less work to do, then why would I keep paying you the same rate? Shouldn't I pay you less then? And those are the customers that kind of didn't get the value proposition of the long-term averaged relationship. They were still thinking like taxi driver, you know, scenario, and were just hoping that I would give them a bunch of free extra consulting for a couple of months, and they put the screws to me in those, you know, months to follow. And those customers are not customers anymore.
Yes. Yes. Amazing how people sort of manage to find a different direction, which is really important. But I would think that in creating that kind of retainer-based service, as well as that really incredible customer retention rate that you have, that there's a certain amount of accountability that's involved in that kind of relationship. So can you talk a little bit about how you improve your accountability to your customers and also to the business overall?
Yeah, part of our accountability to our customers is on an individual interaction basis. When a customer puts in any technical request, any emergency, they send an email to help@valiant-ny.com or techsupport@theirowndomain.com. They immediately get a message back from us that says, from our ticket system that says, hey, we've got your request. Here's your ticket number. A dispatcher is going to look at it, triage it, assign an engineer, and you'll be hearing from us shortly. As soon as the dispatcher does his review, triage, prioritization, and assignment, the customer then gets another communication that simply states, yep, it's been assigned to Mark, and he, you know, it's set as status high, which means that he'll be in touch with you in no less than, you know, 30 minutes. If there's anything further, you can give us a call. So that like individual sort of communication and that level of email accountability continues throughout the ticket process. But that's just on an individual interaction. Mm-hmm. On a macro level, on a bigger level, we have a dedicated account manager structure at Valiant where every customer has their particular geek to English translator that they get to work with. And that person speaks with them every month, no less than that, where there's a phone call, there's a quick, how we doing, how's it going, anything on your list, I took a look at your tickets and things seem fairly normal, that bit of it. And then there's a much more formal sit down every quarter. We do a quarterly health report with our customers. We're bringing in, on the first visit, we're bringing them a binder, a three-ring binder that is full of information that we've gleaned over, you know, since we've gotten started. It's got their inventory and their usernames and passwords and what they're spending on all of their systems. And then it has an analysis of our tickets and the requests that have been coming in. Where is the volume and the bulk of your noise, your technical noise happening? What is our strategy for making it better? How do we manage your budget? How do we build a budget? I have yet to meet a small business owner that has a technology budget. Every small business owner's technology budget is as little as possible and only when I need to absolutely spend it when you're pointing a gun at me. But every medium and large business, they do have a technology budget. Sure. Budget. They do understand the value of planning and managing cash flow. And technology is just one component of that cash flow. They also understand the value of planning the moves that your business is going to make. So we try to bring that big business planning, that big business communication, that forethought, that plan, you know, that consultative approach to a small business, because it's possible. That's the nice thing of buying, you know, sort of a fractional relationship with a real CIO. You still do get that CIO.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And when we were speaking earlier, you used the phrase fire teams in terms of how the management structure in your own business has grown. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about them, what inspired their development, and why it works?
Sure. When we first started our business, I was an IT director, an engineer, a full-time propeller head my whole life. When I started the business, I didn't know anything about running a business. So I did what any geek does. I went and I bought a bunch of books. And one of the books that really helped inform what I was going to do with my life was The E-Myth. And in The E-Myth, he talks about build an org chart for what you'd like to see your business being with all of these, you know, mythological people that don't exist for now, whoever's running accounts payable and HR and all that. And for now, put your own name in every one of those org chart blocks. And for a couple of years, that is how it was. I mean, I was an engineer and HR and PR and accounts payable and accounts receivable and all of that. Over time, I've been fortunate enough to grow the business and hire new people to take on those spots in the org chart. But the technology team sort of stayed like a blob. It was just like more techs, add more techs. And that's kind of the standard among a lot of IT companies, because any tech can kind of do any job. There are certain specialties, but for the most part, I could grab any one of my guys and have him unjam a printer or devirus a system. I mean, it's not exactly rocket surgery. I mean, it's a general skill we all have. But for real success, for real achievement, I needed to look at that org chart and get it really a little bit more granular. So I started breaking the teams up into these smaller groups. I broke them up into a proactive team, which is a team of guys. We call them V admins, V for Valiant. Their job is to prevent customers from calling. That's their metric for success, is they each have customers that are ranked according to their noise level. What are their reactive broken things, their frequent flyer issues? How can you make them go away? That is their job. I have a reactive team, which is what most IT companies are basically full of, which is a team of guys that sit there and they answer the phone and they let the customer finish their crying jag and then say, okay, I've got you. I've remote controlled your machine and I found the missing file and we're all good. And then I have a projects team, which are the guys that do development and sort of major pivot technology moves for our customers, where they're moving their mail hosting from point A to point B, when they're moving their company from office A to office B, developing products, developing tools, and the like. And each of those little squads of guys has a team leader, a fire squad, a fire team leader. So we keep the number of direct reports down to a very manageable 5. Nobody ever has more than 5 direct reports. And that's really helpful.
Now, you use the phrase fire team. Were you actually looking at, let's say, firehouses as a model for how this works?
It wasn't so much the firehouse, although I am the son of a firefighter. It was more of the military principle of army squads. You know, every squad will have a specialist or a corporal in charge, and every cluster of squads will have a sergeant in charge of that cluster of squads. And, you know, the way that their force hierarchy is structured, it makes a lot of sense, and it prevents there from being total chaos. I mean, there's certainly going to be chaos on a battlefield. And if this system is good enough to be what's been implemented over time to mitigate that chaos on a battlefield, I'm mm-hmm. fairly certain that it can mitigate the chaos of a small business, even one that provides tech support.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what have been the biggest improvements you've experienced in your business, in your life, as a result of reorganizing into these fire teams from having just a technology blob of guys?
Well, I mean, the big thing is that we now can actually measure and gauge the success of each team and of the business as a whole. And when there is a slip in any particular team, we can see how it impacts the business as a whole. We do run with something of an open kimono in our organization. So every engineer knows what everybody else's average ticket resolution time is, and the number of tickets that they're taking, and the number of hours that they're putting on the clock. And they understand our revenue numbers. They understand our profit numbers. We endeavor to keep all of that open so that when I am discussing with them why it's important that the proactive team step it up this month because last month was a little bit of a slip, I can show them and say, and look at what impact you've had on the reactive team. Their ticket volume has gone up by 5%. And that doesn't seem like a lot to you, but just imagine if I asked you to stay late, you know, an extra couple of nights a week to make up for the backlog, which is what's been happening to them. It's not fair. So let's step that up. Mm-hmm. And it eliminates any sense of anybody being owed anything. Everybody understands what they owe. You know, it's that ask not what you can do, what can be done, ask what you can do, whatever, the JFK.
Yes, JFK. Absolutely.
I mean, that's really what's happened here is we created a structure whereby everybody has an opportunity to say, how can I help that team? How can I help this team? As opposed to what's at the top of my inbox? What's at the top of the technology request blob? And do I want to grab that or not?
Right. So it sounds like there have definitely been improvements in the team. And how has that also helped you as a business leader within your company? How has that freed you up in certain ways?
It's freed me up in quite a few ways. I mean, first and foremost, I don't have to manage a fleet of, when I really did this, I had about 15 people. I didn't have to manage 15 people anymore. I only had to manage really three. I made a service director who is sort of the king of all service. I'm able to talk with him. He totally understands that. So my day now can be spent doing debriefs with just a few people. And then the remainder of my week can be reviewing their results a little bit more clinically while also focusing on sales and not being distracted by operational tasks.
Mm-hmm. Great. And in terms of understanding exactly how the fire teams work, I mean, did you have a military background? How did you even know to create this or come upon that as a business model for you?
Well, I'm definitely not military. I am a computer nerd. Not to say that there aren't computer nerds in the military, but me and push-ups aren't exactly friends. But I am a student of history. I went to Queens College and got a degree in history and military history. Modern European history was really my focus. And most of modern European history is military history. It's studying military action, studying military structure, military revolutions, and the like. So I've always sort of had a knowledge of it and an interest in it. I mean, it's just sort of a guy thing too, to just sort of be like into that ooh-rah sort of vibe. But as long as I can read about it and not have to actually do the push-ups, I think it's been quite fun. We hired a couple of veterans over the years, which has also been really informative because their work ethic has been tremendous. And their cool-headedness under our version of fire is really second to none, because no matter how bad it gets, they always look at us and laugh and say, you think this is hard? And And that's made a big difference. And I've had those conversations with them to say, well, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And I've spoken with peers and I've looked at much larger organizations and saw what they had in common was that they did have something of a hierarchical structure. I think that the more successful businesses have in the modern era have a little bit more flexibility and a little bit less aggressive siloing. But no matter what, you always still have to organize the team to some degree, I mean, and start separating roles. Otherwise, you just have too many dogs fighting over the same bone.
Mm-hmm. You used a phrase a little earlier, the open kimono approach. How does that help in terms of creating an atmosphere of trust within the company? And what brought you to the place of saying, yes, this is how I want to run my business?
Well, I would say that my mom's a hippie. And sort of always raised me to be open, honest, and not a greedy bastard, which was definitely a risk when I started a business was, oh boy, he's going to be capital, he's going to be management. And but I was raised to be a very egalitarian in that regard. So I'd much rather let my staff know that I am actually not the highest compensated member of the team. I'd rather let the staff know that my goal is not a 40% net profit where I can just run and buy a Ferrari and live in Venice for the rest of my life. That's not really my goal. It's not what motivates me. And so by running the book a bit more open, everybody can sort of understand what we're building, what we're working on. And when they come in and campaign for a raise, they keep their requests reasonable. they keep them in line with the reality of our business. And they understand that although they may make more money going and working for an investment bank in IT, they know full well that the work would be a hell of a lot more dull and the culture would be horrible by comparison to what we've built. So they understand what they're getting and what they're giving.
Right. And when we were talking earlier, you mentioned that you have business partners.
Mm-hmm.
What have you found the most effective way for you to communicate as a team? And how has that also helped you in the growth of your business?
Well, we've tried waving guns around. We've tried throwing bottles at each other. We've done the screaming and the cursing. And every once in a while, we still go back to the screaming and cursing. But mostly what works is what we call a debrief system. The way that I manage my direct reports is via once a week and 1 hour debrief conversation, where we don't talk about like smaller tactical issues, but rather bigger strategic moves. And it's also just an open floor conversation too, so that if there is a particular tactical thing that needs a little bit of advice, we can talk about it. But the real goal of it is to talk strategic and to talk bigger picture. And that works on a direct report scale, but it also works on a partnership level because as the president of the company, I essentially report to no one except that I do have to report to the board. So what happens during my debrief is that I leave my president hat on, my partners take off their CIO, CTO hat, and they put on their board member hat and they debrief me and they ask me what I'm doing strategically and what my results are and that sort of thing. And that's really worked because it's allowed us to sort of pack our ego in our backpack and put it away and just sort of focus on addressing this professionally.
And it's interesting that they use that phrase, putting your ego in your backpack, because another podcast guest also talked about putting your ego in the closet. Mm-hmm. So you have an unusual situation, which you call the rotating president. Will you talk a little bit about how that came up and how do you get that to work?
Well, how I get it to work is with a lot of patience and alcohol.
Occasional screaming and cursing. Perhaps.
Occasional screaming and cursing.
No guns.
No guns. No knives. No more throwing bottles. We've outgrown that era. No, but how it came about. I was the original president and founder of the company. My two business partners that joined me were my VP, my pair of VPs, really. In terms of, we were a trio, so our titles were glorified. But 5 years into our business, I was actually diagnosed with a non-cancerous brain tumor. And it was a shock. I had two small children. It was just after 2008 when the market had taken a dump and I was staring down the barrel of my business was falling apart. I might be dying. I have these kids. What the heck am I going to do with my life? Is this really what I want to do? So I realized that the tumor was non-cancerous. It was going to be treated. It was going to be fine. But that confrontation with mortality made me realize that what I loved about starting Valiant was the starting. It was the chaos and the fun and the joy of building a new business. So I asked my partners if it would be okay if I got started on building a new business. And I wanted to build an e-waste recycling company. They didn't want to have anything really to do with garbage if they could avoid it. Really, they wanted to continue running a managed service provider. Shiny new computers are a heck of a lot more fun than dirty old broken computers. And I understood that. So my business partner, George, he said, no problem. I would like to be president. And I said, great, you're the boss. I'm going to go run and build this e-waste recycling company called The Fourth Bin. Got a couple of additional business partners to run that company, got that company off the ground, and I loved it. And it was great for me during my, you know, sort of convalescence and the unexpected addition of a third little boy into my life. And it's been fantastic. And after a few years of getting The Fourth Bin up and running, when I came back to Valiant, we had grown the business. We had gotten bigger. I wasn't going to come back and just take over as president. George was doing a good job. So I just ran sales. But in running sales as my only job, I ran sales really well, and I grew the business very quickly, and I grew it faster than George was necessarily comfortable. I think that George's style is to really be much happier in a group of 10 to 15, whereas I was really looking to get the business to be maybe about 50 people, somewhere around there, a $10 million revenue target. And George also sort of envied my opportunity to go create and build a new business. So he said, hey, I want to do the same thing. I don't have a brain tumor. I just want to build a business. I want to build a cloud services company and start doing development. How about you come back as president and I'll go run this thing? So it's been great. I mean, my business partners are my best friends. I've known them since for 20 years. I've known George since my first year of college and Gene very, very soon after that. And we started as friends before we were coworkers. We started as friends before we were business partners. And every once in a while, we endeavor to remind each other that, and it works. I mean, even just last night, we went out for some cocktails and just had a nice conversation. It's nice when we can do that and just say, wow, look what we've made.
That's wonderful. And it sounds like you've also found a way to really be able to put the company first instead of, as you say, playing with egos.
Yeah.
And jockeying for position.
Yeah. One of the principles in the book, The Breakthrough Company, is that for real success, you have to crown the company. You have to really make the company come first, and it has to be treated like a person, like your baby, like your jewel. And if you do that, you'll have no problem making those ego-free decisions, even if it means stepping aside to let somebody else run the ship for a little while you get better. Mm-hmm. That's okay. It'll still be there when you get back. Whereas if you try to hold on too tightly, it might not be.
Right. You know, and it's interesting you use the metaphor of a child, because I often say that if business owners treated their children and micromanaged their children as much as they micromanage their business, there's going to be a lot of need for therapists in the next generation.
That's probably true. Although my fairly lackadaisical, I wouldn't say lackadaisical, that's the wrong word. It's entirely too many
hands
syllables.
Off.
And I would say hands off or trusting approach to running my business kind of mirrors my kids, because I have no idea where they are right now. I'm kidding. They're in school. My wife is getting them. But I never understood that micromanagey management style. I think that you're wasting entirely too much energy. If you hired someone to do a job, you hire them because they're smart. Let them do their job. If you don't trust that they're smart, then either you have issues or the role doesn't require a smart person, and you just have to do the Ray Kroc McDonald's, like, you know, put the French fries here and not there kind of thing. But in most small businesses that have that micromanager, it will always cripple your growth.
Mm-hmm. And did you come to that management style on your own, or were there certain influences on you?
Definitely came to it on my own. I would say that a part of where I learned it was in bands. I was a drummer in a series of fairly unsuccessful rock and roll bands around the country. And it's not really possible to micromanage in a band and be successful. There are bands that manage to pull it off, where there's that one personality in the band that just dictates everything, what you're going to wear and how we're going to play and how we're going to do it. But those bands tend to just be centered around that one person. Whereas the bands that I've always respected are the ones where each musician gets to do their thing, and they're there because they love it, and they're there because they're good, and they're there because they're passionate. And I'm going to play the drums and you're going to sing and he's going to play guitar and we're going to do it together. We're going to be in the same room and do it together, but you don't have to tell me how to do my job. I know how to do my job. And in fact, you don't know how to do my job.
Mm. That's a great point. Well, Tom, listen, you've given us just so much. And what I'm hearing are so many different influences between just military, open kimono, your mom is a hippie, raised to be egalitarian, playing in bands. All of these things can obviously combine in their own very special way to create a successful business. So thank you so much for being with us today on Business Breakthrough.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thanks to you for tuning in today. You know, I really want you to have a breakthrough in your business as well. So as a loyal listener, I want to give you free access to one of my special video trainings that I call Ignite. In this Ignite webinar, I share my quick growth scale formula that lets you bust through the plateau, design a self-sustaining business, and live the life you deserve. You can get free access by going to businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Again, that's businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Breakthrough.